Well, my project focused on a very specific population within central Massachusetts, looking at something that I know all of us in this room are very familiar with, which is how lack of dental insurance can affect oral health and overall oral health outcomes. I have no relationships to disclose. And so I'm going to give a little bit of background first and then focus on my case study in two different ways. First, on how the outcomes of my case study affected the population that I was working with as it was originally designed as an intervention, and then looking at the outcomes from a research perspective. Keeping in mind, of course, that many of the limitations in the statistical analysis stem from the fact that we were attempting to use it in an expedient way to help provide patient care for a population who had lost a dental home. So just to give you a little bit of background about dental franchises, this is sort of a growing hot topic within the dental world. Large group dental practices are often the term that are being used in the literature, which describes any practice that consists of four or more dentists. One of the larger concerns is that they're often not dentist-owned and may have business incentives that are not necessarily in line with patient care. This is a model that's growing in popularity. So it's more than doubled between 1997 and 2002. It continues to become more popular every year. Most presciently, it's more popular with recently graduated dentists and female dentists like myself, and it's now accounting for 41% of all annual dental receipts. It's also important to mention that a large group practice is not the same as a dental franchise. So a dental franchise is often described as a large organization that has one or more outposts at which they're providing dental care, and they are most frequently not dentist-owned. So there are a little bit of a variation between that and a conventional large group practice, which could just be a bunch of dentists working together in one location. In spite of the difference between those terms, there's never really been any literature describing patient demographics at either the franchise or large group practice setting and how it might vary from a more conventional dental delivery model. There are a lot of factors that come into play here. One is that dental franchises often posture themselves as people who target a population that may not be served by community health centers but still is unable to access sort of the conventional private practice model. Another factor is that there are often allegations of impropriety or predatory salesmanship within the media concerning dental franchises and their possible behaviors. In spite of that, practice-based research networks have actually found that those dentists practicing in larger practices tend to be more conservative with their treatment decisions than dentists practicing alone. So there could be some sort of idea that teamwork is encouraging more conservative attitude and having consults. And again, this encompasses a very large definition where it could be four dentists working alone or it could be a dentist working within a very large franchise. So in short, the literature is sort of uncertain as to how we're understanding this growing practice model. And very briefly, given the expertise of the collective room, I'm just going to talk a little bit about how intuitive what I studied was, which is that quite naturally dental insurance does affect the cost out-of-pocket of dental care and one's ability to access dental care. And given that 108 million Americans in the United States don't have dental insurance, this is pretty important. So obviously, by having dental insurance, you tend to spend less out of pocket, and you're also incentivized to go to the dentist regularly for things like preventive visits, which then decrease subsequent expense, just because of the structure of dental insurance. Across the country, insured individuals are more likely to have visited a dentist in the past. This becomes especially important when we talk about the graying of the United States and the fact that seniors, as Medicare doesn't cover any dental insurance, have the lowest rate of dental insurance. In Massachusetts specifically, we're facing a 20% of our population reaching the age of 65 by 2030. Even though Medicare doesn't cover dental insurance, they are the primary payer for emergent dental conditions in the ED. So the fact that this is something that is not covered by Medicare is going to become an even bigger issue as we start to pay on the back end for something we're not paying for in the preventive setting. So now speaking a little bit about my case study specifically, the population that I was looking at was from a dental franchise called All Care Dental and Dentures, which was operating out of 11 states, and which filed for bankruptcy and abruptly closed on Christmas Day in 2010, leaving an enormous number of patients in several states without any dental home and any continuity of care, to the extent that dentures in process were left at labs with patients unable to get them. So a true crisis in dental care for a lot of communities. So the specific location that I was looking at basically spent months shuttered with its records unprotected in a strip mall when Holyoke Health Center, a federal qualified health center operating in central Massachusetts, became the legal guardian for these records just to protect patient anonymity. However, in adopting these records, one of their concerns was trying to figure out how to resume continuous care for the population. So as a student, what I helped do was sort through these patient records and try and generate a very quick and easy triage system to look at who might be the people who most need care and how we could start trying to integrate them into Holyoke's general dental care delivery model. So again, expediency was the primary goal in creating this coding system, which obviously was not what would be ideal for doing statistical analysis later on down the line. So looking at these 11,166 records, we recorded patient age, gender, whether or not they had dental insurance. We did not make any discrimination between having a publicly funded insurance versus a private insurance enrollment. We also recorded people who had no teeth versus people who had teeth. So we weren't looking at partial edentulism, in spite of the fact that, of course, partial edentulism can make very dramatic impacts on people's quality of life and oral health as well. Also, we recorded people to be edentulists who, at their most recent visit, didn't have teeth. So again, we weren't looking at whether people became edentulists over the course of their treatment or people who were presenting to have the dentures fabricated. Finally, we created a catch-all term that we just saw as a dental risk factor, which was anyone who noted they had problems with previous dental work, TMD, any present oral soles and ulcers, or whether they had diabetes. So again, very catch-all term, and we can talk a little bit more later about how these terms might actually contrast with each other in a way that makes this useful for triage, but less useful for understanding this patient population from a demographic perspective. So again, you're basically generating a binary algorithm looking at these three risk factors, whether or not people had insurance, whether or not they had a dental risk factor, and whether or not they had teeth. And in order to just make a hierarchy, people who did not have insurance did have dental risk factors and did have teeth were seen as the highest risk. And then that was descended in order of age in order to determine who should be reached out to first. And of course, there are some limitations to the way this was generated as well, which I'd be happy to talk about later. Ultimately, after the outreach portion of the project was completed, the size of the data set got my wheels turning in terms of thinking about how to better understand this patient population and what had happened in the central franchise. So then the same triage information that had been used to generate the algorithm was used in terms of statistical analysis. So after getting an IRB waiver and looking exclusively at adults within this population, those over 18, in spite of the fact that actually from Medicaid perspective, Massachusetts considers those between the ages of 18 and 21 to also be minors and receives comprehensive dental care through Medicaid. So first we assessed it using bivariate statistics and then ultimately plugged it into a logistic regression in order to look at the relative contribution of the various variables here. So in summary, looking at those without insurance and those with insurance, perhaps unsurprisingly, those who choose to visit a dental practice tend, on average, to be more likely to be insured than those who don't. So again, while the United States has about a 30% dental insurance rate, here it's about 50%. About 50-50, male-female, and people without insurance who visit this practice did tend to be older by a significant amount. About 25% of the population had a dental risk factor, and about 80% had teeth of any kind, which again is lower than we would see in the general U.S. population, and especially in higher income groups. So in terms of significance, looking at those with and without insurance, the only variable found to be significant with bivariate analysis was whether or not people had teeth. Ultimately, when looking at the logistic regression model, both age and insurance status were found to be contributory. Some studies in the past have found that gender may play a role in oral health, particularly in older adults, but that wasn't replicated here. Perhaps unsurprisingly, as we get older, it is more difficult to maintain one's dentition, so that one is pretty intuitive. And then again, insurance status is a very significant contributor here. So those who do not have insurance are 1.56 times as likely not to have teeth as those that do. And then looking specifically at those over 50, and we also did an analysis for those over 65, but because of the size of the sample, we could not reproduce significance for that group. So looking at over 50, I think, is people a gestalt of an older population, especially since by 2030, this will be the group that's over 65, which is what we were working about in Massachusetts. So again, similar significances, a slightly higher odds ratio. So in an older population, insurance status becomes an even more significant contributor to this risk of eventualism. So again, there are a great number of limitations in this particular case study. I want to address sort of two sides of that. One is the limitations in how we reached out to people. I think most specifically, we assume that people who did not have teeth were at lower risk of oral health problems just for the sake of the triaging, but of course, those who have no teeth and have a lack of dental prostheses or ill-fitting prostheses are quite urgent dental need. And that was something that we were unable to take into account within the framework of the triage system we were using. Now looking at it from a statistical analysis perspective, the oral health risk factors category was far too broad. Maybe biased towards individuals with teeth, because if one doesn't have teeth, one is less likely to have problems with previous dental work, at least in a self-defined manner. Also, of course, there's the causation versus correlation question, which is that if one does not have teeth, one may elect not to enroll in dental insurance, believing it's not particularly cost-effective. Because of this population and tendency to be enrolled in public insurances, I think that may be less of a concern, but it's definitely something to think about. Of course, this also plays into the fact that patients should be educated about the need for regular dental care, even if they are edentulous, and the frequency of which they should have their dentures fabricated and getting oral cancer screenings and things like that. So just briefly touching on the implications of these outcomes. First is that describing the demographics of a patient population that's not been very well studied. Patients who seek care in the franchise setting do tend to be older and more likely to have dental insurance than in the average, even U.S. average. And then I think most importantly is that there are numerous studies that bear out that dental insurance is protective of one's dentition. Most of these studies have been done on broad population-based scales, including things like telephone outreach to all the households in the state and things like that. But it's never been specifically looked at in a population that's choosing to enter the dental care delivery system. So eventually, even those people who have a very difficult time accessing the system, who do not have the means to pay for it, do not have dental insurance, and numerous other risk factors, eventually there will come a time when they are forced to seek dental care, and when they do, their outcomes will be worse. So that was the primary finding that I think is worth taking away from my work. So thank you so much for your attention.
Lisa is another one of our pre-professional Jung Award recipients. Thank you for your presentation. Our final presenter today is Lubab Slashava. And Lubab is a third-year dental student at the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Dentistry. She actually founded the school's student group for special care interests and is in the Dental Public Health Club. Just very much involved in special populations. Join me in welcoming Lubab.